My name is Ray O'Keefe. I'm an alcoholic. Last week we were discussing, or I was discussing, the first step in our program, and I was trying to indicate to you what it had been like. And basically what it was, I thought, in my own case, was a life of isolation and a life of terror. And I told you, and I do believe, that I could have lived probably with the physical alcoholism. I had learned to live with that. I had learned that it wasn't so bad to throw up every morning. And I could live with wetting the bed every night. And I could live with having no feeling in my right leg up to my hip. And I was getting along all right. And I didn't smell so good. And I didn't look too good. I looked sort of Chinese. My eyes were sort of closed. And But I learned over the years. It took me 23 years to get there. And I could have lived with that, I think, for a while, until something gave out. And that wasn't really what brought me here. What brought me here was the terror. I could not manage a life that was entirely based on terror and fear. I just couldn't manage. I could not live that way. And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, where I had been once before. And I did not come as a volunteer. There are very few volunteers in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, some guy sitting at a bar, and he's on his second drink. Things are going well at home. There's money in the bank. The boss is pleased with his performance. His stocks are doing nicely. He has a nice car in the parking lot. Kids are in school. Everything's progressing as it should be there. And he looks at the drink and he says, "This shit is killing me. I better go to AA." We don't get that here. So we don't get those people. They don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe they should. It would tone up the place a little. We get people like me. The door opens and they propel this person in. They throw him in. And standing behind him is she who must be obeyed. His boss, three cops, and a judge. Someone from motor vehicles, somebody from the parole department. They're all standing out in the hall saying, "Here he is." All of them. Powers greater than our own. That's what we get here. See, I was trying to make that point last week. This is not for people who drink too much. A lot of people drink too much. A lot of guys drink too much. You see them around, they drink too much. So they stop. Somebody says, "Listen, Herman, you're drinking too much. You're absolutely right. And I'll stop that." And he does. My brother-in-law, Louis, for instance. Louis gets on about his third drink, and he puts it down, and he says, "I'm beginning to feel it." Actually, like you get him by the throat, you know? Say, "That's what it's for, Louis." We don't get people like that here. We get people who are powerless. People like me. It isn't a question of drinking less, because there's no way to drink any less, and God knows there's no way I could have drunk any more. I was without power. I was powerless, and they threw me through the door, and I came crawling in here, and that's what happened. I was isolated because there's nobody an alcoholic can talk to except another alcoholic. You can't talk. I couldn't talk to the people I worked with, who were lawyers and professors of law. What are you going to say to them? "Good morning, Professor. Everybody wet the bed this morning?" You know? Raise your hand, you know. "Hey, excuse me, Dean, while I take this puke off my shoe." You know, you call the police. This is not. There's nobody I could talk to. I couldn't even consult with my spiritual advisor, the bartender, Charlie. At Jansen's, I couldn't. Charlie would say, "How you doing?" "Fine, Charlie." You know, "What am I going to say? I'm terrified, Charlie." I couldn't do that. I had no one I could consult with. I couldn't ask my family anything, because nobody talked to me there anyhow. I couldn't, my friends, I didn't have any friends. I lived in isolation. Whatever friends I had, I had sort of just given up. Everything I had, I sort of just gave up. I really am not even sure where I went. It just sort of slipped away. I had that job. That was gone. It just went away. They took that away from me one day. And I had a lot of other things, but little by little, it just sort of went away. And I just stayed there, and I was in this little box, isolated, terrified, and powerless. And that was the condition in which I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think it was fairly typical at the time. People like me, I showed up here, and I did what I was told. That was a brand new thing. I did the right thing for the first time. I got a sponsor. If you're at the first step, that is the first step. I stopped drinking. That's the first thing. I got a sponsor. I became a member of a group, and I became part of the We in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to meetings, and I didn't drink. I did not drink. Amazing thing, I didn't drink, and I didn't drink for some period of time, a few months perhaps. And then after I stopped drinking, I understood the powerlessness of my situation. While I was drinking, no one ever told me I was powerless over alcohol. No one ever even mentioned that to me. I never heard the expression until I came here. I knew I drank too much, sure. I guess I knew I was an alcoholic. I'd never heard that one, being powerless. Only after I stopped drinking, and then I could say, yeah, that's right. I never had any power about that stuff. All I could do was drink it and get sick from it. I never had any power. I never drank if I did drink, I got drunk. I never drank not to get drunk. I never understood that there was any other reason to do it. And I knew I couldn't do it anymore. That's powerlessness. And also, whatever beliefs I once might have had, I'm not talking now about religion or theology or God or anything like that, beliefs. If I ever believed anything at all, by the time I got here, I had ceased to be a believer. I was a universal skeptic. I did not believe in America, Mom, and I don't like apple pie. I didn't believe. People would tell me things, and I didn't believe it. And not only that, I wasn't interested. I was busy. When I was drinking, I had a schedule to maintain. I was busy, and I didn't have time for things like that. You know, they would say, I don't know, what do you think about the red Chinese? Are you kidding me? Give me another drink. I was busy. I never had time for that. And I was skeptical and cynical from a very, very early age. I can recall being in grammar school in the Bronx with the nuns. In the third grade, and in those days, they made you memorize the states and the capitals. And I did that. And sister asked me one day, the capital of Montana. Well, I knew it was a green. Wyoming is a blue. Montana is a green. I remembered that part. But I didn't know the capital. And she berated me that I didn't know the capital. I told her I'd never been out of the neighborhood. She said, the capital of Montana. You got to know the capital of Montana. I said, what the hell do I care? What the capital of Montana is. I never been west of 149th Street. And that was my attitude. It didn't affect me, the capital of Montana. It didn't affect how I lived. Neither did presidential elections, world wars, taxes, anything like that. It just didn't interest me. My wife would say, somebody died. Somebody in the town died. What do I care somebody died? It had nothing to do with me. I just was not interested in anything except getting myself drunk and staying drunk. And that's full time. I had become totally self-centered. But I came here, and things began to change with me. I began to feel better, first of all, physically. I slept well. I used to never sleep well. I always fell out of bed. I don't know if you ever had that, but I could never stay in the bed. I would wake up on the floor all the time. I'd wake up kneeling like I was trying to get back in the bed, and I never made it. And I'd be all cramped up, and I don't know how I got on the floor. I know I started out in the bed, and I end up on the floor and with a puddle, you know, and it was... But now I slept in a dry bed, you know, all night long. That makes you feel good. And then I woke up, and I had breakfast, which I never had before. My breakfast would be about 5 drinks, and I had managed to get a job, and I was doing okay there. It wasn't the best job I ever had, but it was a job. And these people took me in. They knew about my situation, and they really did me a great service. They took me in, and they let me work there. Things were beginning to shape up. I bought a pair of shoes. I remember that. I got a crystal for my watch. I had been walking around for about a year with no crystal in the watch. I didn't have time. I was busy. I was an item. I got the crystal back in the watch, and I had new shoes. I was working on some other things. I was going to buy a tie soon, and I had a sort of a program going, and I was feeling my oats, and I had about 3 months' worth. And then my sponsor said, time for you to look at the second step. Second step says that we, you and I, came to believe that a power greater than our own could restore us to sanity. Well, by this time I had come here, and I really had to come here to believe, because outside of here, at the time that I came here, I did not believe. I'm not talking yet about God or anything else like that. I was not a believer. I did not believe things. When you told me something, I either didn't care about it or I didn't believe it. That was my alternative. You say, you know, my mother is sick. Oh, that's nice. You know, your mother's sick. Tell her I care. Your mother's sick. I didn't care, or I didn't believe it. And so I began to see things around me. You know, I was going to these meetings every night, and I noticed things. I noticed, for instance, that my sponsor and another fellow up there that named Al that used to drive me around, when they said they'd be at my house at 8 o'clock, they were there. They showed up at 8 o'clock. You could rely on those guys. I knew that the meetings started at 9 o'clock in that section. I knew that when I got there, there'd be a meeting. There were 8 people in my group when I joined it. And 8 of them were there every Wednesday and every Saturday. I knew they'd be there. I knew that. I believed it. I would show up, and there they were. They were all sitting around. I believed a lot of stuff. I began to believe my sponsor. He knew things. He would tell me, this will probably happen. And it probably did happen. He knew things that I didn't know. I began to believe him. When he told me something, I believed him. And not only that, I was interested in what he was telling me. Not because I wanted to be better or anything else. I was so afraid to go back there. I just couldn't go back to the terror. And this was the way out. And he'd talk to me. He was very patient. He'd talk to me. He'd say, now pay attention to this. You get my attention. And he'd tell me something. Something really important, you know. He'd say, listen, if you don't drink, you can't get drunk. I'd say, thank you very much, that's good. Yeah. He'd say, you know, since you stopped stealing, no one's caught you stealing. I'd say, that's right. See, he'd say. I'd say, yeah, that's right. I began to... Little things were beginning to get my attention, you know. I believed him. He'd say, what should I do? He'd say, sit down. And I'd sit down. You know? That worked out well. I sat there, and everything was okay. And nobody bothered me, one guy said that if I kept this up, they'd let me make some coffee soon. You know? That was encouraging. That was encouraging. Kept pointing over to the kitchen. He'd say, you're next. You're soon. But you had to work your way into that up there. You know? It was not an easy thing to get to be a big shot. Thank God in AA that sober is as high as we go. That's it. Sober is as high as you get in AA. It saves AA from people like me. But I really did begin to believe it. Now, I want you to understand, I'm an educated person. And in the second step, the word power is capitalized. So I knew something was going on. So I said to him one day, what does this mean, John, a power greater than my own? And he said, a power greater than your own means a power greater than your own. I thought for a minute there, I felt like Moses. Remember when Moses was talking to the burning bush? Moses said to the burning bush, who are you? And the burning bush said, I am who I am. And Moses said, thank you for clearing that up, see? That's how I felt with this guy. I wanted him to give me some explanation about a power greater than my own. He said, that's a power greater than your own. He said, now you have to come to believe. And I said, well, something's going on. And I really did believe it. One day I was going to work on a train. And I got to Grand Central, and I went up to my office, which connected with Grand Central, and I sat in my chair. Now, you may not think that's a big deal. But for many, many years, I had never been able to go through Grand Central without getting a drink, or two, or 10, or whatever. Grand Central in New York City is a collection of saloons that are connected by tunnels. And I would tear around a tunnel, and I had my little spots. I knew everybody, all the bartenders. And the idea of getting off the train and going right to the office and sitting in a chair, I sat in a chair and I said, boy, first of all, I didn't drink this morning and I hadn't had a drink for a couple of months, maybe more. And secondly, more importantly, I didn't think about having a drink when I got off that train. And that's when I began to understand there was something going on here. Because the only difference in my life in those 3 months was the fact that I was going to an AA meeting every night, and I had a sponsor and I had a group. And I didn't want to drink. It occurred to me, I don't want to drink. I said, my God, there's something going on. Now, I knew that it wasn't the building, and I knew it wasn't the coffee, and I knew it wasn't even the people I saw around me. But I knew there was something, some power operating here. And the way the second step was presented to me by my sponsor did not involve God. It involved a concept of power. After all, if you are powerless, the one thing you must have is power. He pointed out to me that portion of our book which says that the main object of this book is to enable you to find a power greater than your own to help you with your drinking. And God, did I need power? I needed something to help me. I came here to believe, and I did come to believe. But I say to you, I had to believe. I had to believe. Because I had lived a life in the last maybe 5 years of my drinking between the terror and the isolation. The end result of that in my life was despair. I truly despaired. And I truly was a person without hope. Because I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1963. I was here for 10 months. And I got drunk. And therefore, I did not think that it would work for me. I really had no hope. I thought perhaps I could get a little better. Maybe I could get a handle on something that would keep me alive a little longer than I expected to live. And of course, I knew about my family. I knew everybody, all the males, had died of alcoholism. I'm really the only male member of my entire family ever to arrive at and go past age 50. I knew what happened about alcoholism. I had a lot of knowledge about alcoholism. I taught a course at the school involving, and I still do, I teach constitutional law and criminal law, and criminal law very much involves addiction and alcoholism, and I knew all about it from a book point of view. But our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is very clear on that too. It says you have to be absolutely convinced that self-knowledge avails you nothing. All of the knowledge I had, all of the information that was in what was left of my head, avail me nothing. My prior conditioning never helped me with alcoholism. The fact that I was born Irish and Catholic certainly didn't help me with alcoholism. My God, that's an entry fee into here. Anything I might once have known or thought about or believed, I could see after I hadn't had anything to drink for a while. All of this knowledge and all of this information never helped me with alcoholism. It never could assist me not to drink. But these people that I went around with, and this group that I was a member of, and this sponsor that kept after me, they had tumbled upon something. Because I could see what was going on. I did not drink. I knew that better than anybody else. I knew I didn't drink, and I hadn't had a drink for several months. By this time, somebody else came in after me at the group. I was not the junior member. I had moved up a notch. And I watched that fellow come in. He looked very bad. I didn't think he'd make it. And then he started to look good. And he got to be sort of civilized. And I figured, geez, it works for him too. And these people I was talking to every night were beginning to make sense to me. In fact, I liked them. I would hang out with them. We would go out to up where I lived. We had a place, we had a beach, and we'd go to the beach. And sometimes we'd go to ball games together, and a lot of times there weren't so many meetings in those days, so we'd all be in cars, and we'd drive, you know, for an hour to a meeting and an hour back from the meeting, and I'd be in a car with three or four of them, and we'd talk the way you talk, in AA, we never get tired of talking. And we go over and over and we tell war stories. I got to know these guys pretty well. And I knew that these were people like me. I never drank with any of them. Those people, I never met them until I came into AA. They weren't the people I drank with, but they were just like a lot of the people I drank with. They said the same thing. They thought the same way, but they were different somehow. And I was beginning to fit in with this crowd, and I began to sense that this power that they were talking about was coming into my life. And I began to believe it, not because I heard about it, not because somebody taught it to me. I learned it because I began to experience it. It was working in my life, this power. And I knew what the capital P was, and I didn't have a position on God as such. I was not then, and I am not now, a member of any religion. I was, like all of us, born to one, but I hear that a lot at meetings on the second step. They were born a Baptist, they were born a Catholic, they were born a Jew, and they tell you all about it. It has nothing to do with the second step. Nothing whatever, because whatever I was born to certainly couldn't help me with respect to the alcoholism. This was a separate kind of a deal. What I really needed here was power. The power that could come into my life and manage it. And as Kim read from the fifth chapter today, no human power could relieve my alcoholism. Of course, I dealt with all those human powers. I'd been through human powers. I've been through the doctors and the nurses, hospitals, farms, sanitariums. I've been through judges. A lot of judges talked to me about my drinking. There were powers greater than myself. My boss at the law school was a power greater than myself. She, who must be obeyed, is a power greater than myself. Anybody who's married and tells you he runs his own house will lie about everything else, too. They all dealt with me. Didn't affect me. But this power, whatever this was, and because I'm the way I am, I thought it was necessary that I had to define it. That I have to define it. He defined it for me. He said it's just what it says. It's power. Power greater. And that's what you need. And that's what I needed. I needed something to come into my life. I had to come to believe things. Now, in the period of time that I have been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have come to believe in many, many, many things. I am now just a conventional believer. My initial alcoholic defiance that the 12 and 12 tells us about, that defiance that I showed, don't tell me what I have to do, that kind of attitude, that sort of just slipped away by coming here, because I became convinced that the men and women that I was associating with, who were members of this group, really had my best interest in heart, at heart. They wanted me to succeed. And you have to, I have to believe in what I see. Not so much in what I've been told. I was told a lot of things going through school, in the early grades of school. I never believed that stuff. I really didn't. And I am not knocking people who are religious. Religious people have to believe a lot of things, or do believe a lot of things that basically are just not so believable. And that's why religion calls it faith. It is a faith which enables a religious person to believe things that normally he would not believe. After all, women usually have sex before they have babies. So if a woman doesn't have sex and has a baby, it takes a little believing. If you got stars in the east and camels on the lawn and guys are coming over from Asia to see what happened, and then somebody dies on Friday afternoon and takes a walk in the garden on Sunday morning, a lot of people, you know. Now, there are millions and millions, billions of people who believe that because they have faith in things that are unseen and unproven and unprovable. And they are good, fine, religious people, and they are sustained by their faith. I have faith in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, not because something that is written in a book about events that took place thousands of years ago. I came to believe that this program had power because of my personal experience. I saw what was going on. I felt better. I had never been able to stop drinking and want to stop drinking before. The first time I was in AA, I wanted to drink practically all the time. I didn't for 10 months, but I wanted to. But this time, I did not want to. I was not thinking about drinking. And the change in my life was what was happening here. I believed it because I saw it, and I heard it, and I rode in cars with it, and I talked to it, and I went to the beach with it, and we went to the Yankee Stadium with it. This was power. It wasn't necessary for me, he told me, that I understand it. He said, you know, there's a light bulb here in the room. You turn on the switch, the light goes on. You don't have to understand electricity. It doesn't make any difference whether the power that's coming into the room that turns on the lights is from atomic energy or coal or oil or three gerbils running around in a thingamajig. What difference does it make? All you have to know is that if you hit the switch on the wall, the lights come on. He said, all you have to know is that if you keep coming to the meetings, you don't have to drink. And he was absolutely right. And he put it to me very simply. He used to talk to me in parables that way. He referred me to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, read that book. It'll tell you that your dilemma is your lack of power. You have no power. It says you are powerless. The trick is here for you to get some power. And then the trick is to tie into that power on a daily basis so that it flows into your life and through your life and out of your life into the lives of other people. And that's really the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. We who come here the way I came here, perhaps the way you came here, without power, I mean just the bottom of it all, and you stumble in here, and something begins to happen. I love that understatement we always say. Something happens. We are in the middle of a 20th century miracle. Lives are being saved on a daily basis. Some wreck like me comes in here, and 3 months later, physically, you really don't recognize him. There's a softening of the features. Things begin to clear up, and he straightens up, and he gets erect, and pretty soon he can speak more than a word or two and become civilized. And all we say is, oh, something happened. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. I don't think, you know, if they said to the three magi, if the magi said, what happened over there? I said, well, the lady never had any sex, but she just had a baby in there. And they say, oh, something happened. Because this is just as astounding. Something happened. How did you turn into the way you are? What did that for you? You couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. There was no way I could do it. I tried every way there was. There was no possible way that I could do this. But here I was a few times later, a few months later. I didn't drink. I didn't want to drink. I was looking forward to going to the meeting. I really wanted to go. I didn't miss any meetings. I didn't go when it was convenient. I went, whether it was convenient or not. If I had to do something else, I did it after the meeting, or I did it before the meeting. But I went to the meeting. Many, many times I went from the meeting back to work to do what I had to do to get ready for the next day, but I did not miss the meeting. Because the meeting is where I think the power is. I think the power is right here in this room. I think whatever power I'm talking about operates in meetings. I don't think it operates in coffee places or ice cream places. I think it operates in meetings. And if you've ever gone to the International Convention and sat, as I have on three occasions, and sat with 25 to 45,000 people at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's enough power in there to light the universe. And this power that I have come to believe in, and the power that operates in my life, is no less a power than that of God. I only speak the English language, and the only word that I know of in the English language that expresses what I am talking about is God. Some people resist that idea. That's perfectly all right. But that is the power that I'm talking about. The power of God. that somehow translated itself into two people in Akron, Ohio in 1935, brought together a whole series of lives that I was talking about last week. The life of Roland Hazard, the life of Ebbie Thatcher, the life of Bill Wilson and Lois Wilson and Bob Smith and Ann Smith and Frank Buckman and Carl Jung. All these lives intertwine, and some kind of a spark was set that lit some type of a light that has come now to North Miami and has been here for some time. And this is a long, long way from Akron, Ohio. And that's power. I think it's the power of God. But if you're new and you don't like that word, if you had a bad experience with God, you don't like the nuns from grammar school, or you don't like the ministers from the Baptist church, or you didn't like the rabbi when you were young or going through school, that's nice. Do you want to die? You want to go back to drinking? You like it back where you came from? You don't like it here? Form your own concept of God. That's what Ebbie Thatcher told Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson didn't want to hear about God. Bill Wilson was a self-styled agnostic. He did not want to hear about God. He was a man of science, he thought. He was a drunken bum, is what he was. And when he saw Ebbie, he said, oh, God, he's got religion. He's gone nuts. He's a crackpot. And Ebbie did have religion of a sort, and he told him. He said, the interesting thing, said Ebbie, about the Oxford movement is you can have any concept of God that you choose. Now, that's a miraculous thought. That's a really miraculous thought. Form your own concept of God. And I have come to understand the God of my understanding as whatever power it is that took me from over there and brought me over here. Because there is no way for someone like me to go from over here to over there. I could not get out of that drinking and come to live with you in Florida. I couldn't get out of my own way. I couldn't get out of my own house many mornings. I couldn't get out of a room. I was once trapped in a hotel in Washington, D.C. for 3 days. I was trapped. I couldn't get out. Every time I decided to go, I ended up so drunk I had to stay. I'll go tomorrow. Tomorrow was the same. For 3 days, I couldn't get out of the Mayflower Hotel. I finally broke out. I thought I'd see something in the paper. O'Keefe is free. You know, busted out of a hotel. Whatever that power is, I don't know what it is. I know where it is. Whatever that power is that brought me from over there to over here, whatever that is, I believe that. Not because somebody from the clergy gave me a lecture about it, but because I have lived with it. I have experienced it. It's it. And any power that can do that for me, any power that can take somebody who's drinking from 2 to 3 quarts a day and bring them down to where they don't drink at all, for even a little bit of time, like 3 months or 5 months, is certainly a power greater than my own. I believe that. The step is a statement of a proposition. It doesn't say that you have to believe in anything. You have to believe that a power greater than your own can restore you to sanity. Any power that could stop me from drinking can do anything they want with me, including restore me to sanity. I hear a lot of talk in AA about, I don't think I was crazy. Maybe I was crazy, but I'm not crazy anymore. I used to be crazy. I don't want to be crazy. Take it from me, will you? You're crazy. Just forget the whole thing about it. You're nuts. You're absolutely crazy. Alcoholism, first of all, is a mental disease, and you got it, or you wouldn't be here. Secondly, the book tells you not only are you crazy, they say you are strangely insane. And they tell us about the jaywalker. Remember the jaywalker? My big buddy, the jaywalker. That was me. He goes across, he gets hit by the truck, he gets hit by the car, he's going to change, he's not going to do it. He keeps jaywalking and it kills him. And the book says substitute alcohol. Does that not describe your behavior? It sure describes mine. Alcohol killed me. It was killing me. And I couldn't let go. I was like a guy going into a lake holding a big rock. And he begins to sink and everybody's yelling, let go of the rock, Sydney. And he's going down. He's holding on to the rock. He's not going to let go. That's me. The booze has got me. And I'm going down and I can't let go of it. And all of a sudden, this power comes along and takes away the rock. Now, wasn't it crazy of me? Sure it was. It isn't the things that we do. I hear that too a lot of meetings. I drove recklessly, I did this, I did that. People who are not alcoholic do that. Non-alcoholics drive drunk. Non-alcoholics get fired. Non-alcoholics beat up their wives. Non-alcoholics don't support their family. It's not that stuff that makes us strangely insane. The drinking makes us strangely insane. The way we think about it, we think we're going to get a handle on it. I thought that. You watch, I'd say to myself. I'd mutter about other people. You watch me, boy, one of these days, you know? One of these days, I'm going to get some dry sheets, and I'm going to get out of this bed, and I'm going to take over here. Complete egomaniac. It was the thinking that does it. The thinking was killing me. I thought like an alcoholic thinks. I thought maybe I could change. I must have thought when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I really don't remember, but I must have thought that I could do something about this. The book says it's like a man who has lost his leg thinking he's going to grow a new one. That's the kind of thinking alcoholics have. It'll be different next time. I know the last time I lost it up. I know I got arrested. I know things happened. Don't worry, Mildred. I'm just going over there to the Kiwanis and have two drinks, and I'll be back. And everything will be wonderful. And 4 days later, you know, he's calling from a bus stop. You won't believe this one, Mildred. She says, yes, I will. It's the same one you told me the last time, you know. And that's us. We do the same thing over and over and over. Every day is the same. Every day is the same. Over and over. And every day is gray. And every day has that horrible beginning and that disastrous ending. And we think it's going to get better. We think we're going to grow new legs. We think we can walk across the street against the light. Everything's going to be fine. And we keep getting knocked down. Now, in other areas of my life, I learned lessons. We had a guy named Sullivan in the neighborhood. He was murderous. We used to call him Filthy. That was his nickname. And I got smart with him one time when I was in my first year of high school. And he hit me a shot that put me across a street almost. You know, I saw him on and off for the next 20 years. I never once shot off my mouth to Sullivan. I had a Sullivan surrender. I knew that he was a power greater than my own. I knew that if I messed with Sullivan, if I met him now, somehow, I wouldn't care if he's in a wheelchair or a walker, where I should be at my age. I would not mouth off to Sullivan. I had a very healthy respect for what he would do to me. Wasn't that way with alcohol? I blacked out and puked and threw up when I was 14. And I kept it up until I was 37. I did 23 years of getting knocked on my ass by Sullivan. And I kept going back for more. And I paid for that. Give me one of those, Charlie. Charlie, give me the same thing that started all the trouble yesterday. A double martini. Give me one of those. I'd have one of those, and pretty soon I'd be looking, where are they? Someone got an airplane schedule? Give that little lady a drink. You know? If my wife calls, I'd be into my number. The whole thing would start all over again, and I'd be right in the middle of it. And all of a sudden, it would be 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be in the freight yards in Stamford, Connecticut, because I had passed out on a train going up. And I'd be looking for that guy with the cab who charged $9 to go back to where I live. And I wondered whether or not someplace was open where I could go in and negotiate a drink. And that's just where I had been the day before. The jaywalker. I just couldn't do it. So I came here. I came to you. I came to a sponsor, I came to a group, and I came to believe. And I believe very simple things. I believe that if I don't drink, if I go to meetings, and if I stay a part of the we in the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe that I can be restored to sanity. I believe that a power greater than my own, which represents to me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is in my life and has been in my life for the last 20 years a manifestation of the God of my understanding. I believe that I can function if I stay a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're at that stage of your sobriety, and I hope you are, if you understand your own powerlessness, if you know that it's all over for you, then do as I do. Do as I have experienced, and come to believe that there is a power greater than your own that can restore you to sanity. Thank you.